Okay, Chevra, I'd like to share some stories. We'll cover the upcoming Yortzeit Gimel Tammuz of Lubavitch Rebbe. And I'd like to start with something that one of our own, Ramir Lukens' father, is Dr. David Lukens, who has come and spoken many years on Simchas Torah when he comes to spend Yom Tov with his family. He's spoken in the shul while we have the kids' hakafas outside. So Dr. Lukens will speak about different topics. We know he's very close to Senator Moynihan. So I'm going to share with the story about connecting this back to Lubavitch Rebbe, to cover the upcoming Yortzeit, and we will tell a few more stories as well, time permitting. So the story is about a woman named Shirley Chilsom. She was elected in 1968 to represent New York's 12th district, which that included Crown Heights, and she made headlines. This was the first African-American woman elected to Congress. But there was politics, Hameivin Yavin, and there was a lot of pressure from the Southern politicians, so the House leadership assigned her to the Agricultural Committee, where they thought that she was not going to be able to have any real influence. And when that happened, again, this is 1968, people in the media started questioning the appointment, and they started expressing doubt as her ability to, affect the legislative agenda. And she passed away in 2005. This welcome that she got in politics was a tremendous amount of frustration. And, there was a woman, Jefferson. She said, I'm reading a quote here. She was trying to help poor people. She was interested in taking care of the issues in the inner city, and that committee had no power. But she got a phone call from the Rebbe's secretary and said, the Lubavitch Rebbe wants to see you. This is what Dr. Lukens said. Again, he was the senior advisor to Senator Moynihan, and he's involved in the political science, the dean, I think, at Touro. So Dr. Lukens, heard this story firsthand in 1983 from Chilsom. It was a party that was celebrating her retirement from Congress. So the Rebbe said, this congressman, I know you're very upset. Now, she lived a block away from the Rebbe and met him once before when she was running for Congress and trying to get some endorsements. She told the Rebbe, I'm upset, I'm insulted, what should I do? So the Rebbe, who did not endorse her candidacy because his policy was not getting involved in campaigns, but he turned the whole thing around. And the Rebbe told her, what a blessing God has given you. What a blessing God has given you. And he urged her to take advantage of the hashkacha that put her in a position to do something about food supplies. He said, this country has so much surplus food. There's so many hungry people. You can use this gift that God gave you to feed hungry people. Find a creative way to do it. Okay, so when she now had this charge from the Rebbe, Chilsom happened to meet the Senator Bob Dole, from Kansas, Republican, on her first day when she arrived in Washington. Senator Dole, a farm state politician, later on become the Senate Majority Leader, presidential candidate, he was looking for help in shoring up the economic plight of the Midwestern farmers because they were losing money on the crops. So again, this late Jefferson was telling the story that the Americans were purchasing their produce from Cuba, And so as a result of all these imports, the farmers were poor. So according to Dr. Lukens, Dole then told Chilsom, our farmers have all the sector food. We don't know what to do with. So she thought, one second, the rabbi. During the next few years and then throughout the 1970s, Chilsom worked to expand the National Food Stamp Program, which allowed poor Americans to buy subsidized food. And then in 1973, the Agriculture and Consumer Protection Act that mandated that food stamps be available at every jurisdiction in the United States. Okay, so from the creation of this program, that's really where Chilsom made her mark. In 1969, the White House Conference on Food, Nutrition, and Health recommended, targeted food supplements for high-risk pregnant women and their infants. So Chilsom in the House and Dole in the Senate, they championed the idea and they got Congress to approve a 2-year pilot project to be administered by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. So the USDA, they fought it. It took a federal lawsuit to get them to relent. And now, today, more than 8 million people receive benefits each month, according to the government figures. So Chilsom was responsible for the food program, She was strong. She was determined. But she gave the ultimate credit to the Rebbe, is what Dr. Lukens said. Quote, at her retirement party, I owe this because a rabbi who's an optimist taught me that what you may think is a challenge is a gift from God. That's what Dr. Lukens said on the media. Quote, listen to this. If poor babies have milk and poor children have food, it's because this rabbi in Crown Heights had vision. Wow, so what an amazing story. You know, here in the shul, I take achrayus. I take achrayus for myself, obviously, for my family. I take achrayus for my talmidim. I take achrayus for the members of the shul. But to my knowledge, the only individual who ever took achrayus for every single Jew was the Rebbe. The only one I know of. And that's the mark, that's the making of a leader, of a gadol. Listen, there's the former chief rabbi, Sephardic chief rabbi, Mordechai Eliyahu, he passed away. He said this the following about the Rebbe. He says, what does a man who's born in Russia, resides in Brooklyn, what does he have to do with Moroccan Jews in Casablanca? What does an Ashkenazic rabbi in the United States have with Sephardic Jews in Morocco? What motivated him to come to their aid? I have one answer. It's because he felt that for every single Jew, he was concerned for every individual and for the entire Jewish nation, not just a certain group, and every single person was important to him. He wanted all Jews to follow their parents' traditions, whether it was Ashkenazi or Sephardic. An example, during my audience in 1986 with him, the Rebbe requested that the chief rabbin of Israel organize public Pesach Sidorim in every city so that people who could not attend a Neder Seder would enjoy a communal one. These Passover events attracted Jews who had never before been to a Seder. Upon seeing the great public interest in this initiative, we worked on broadening the program, which, thank God, is active in many cities and communities until today. Now, why did the Rebbe have an interest that Jews in Israel should join a Jewish event? Because he cared. He cared about those that otherwise wouldn't join a Seder. Why did the Rebbe have an interest in Jews in Israel should join an event? He said he's worried about that fifth son. That fifth son is the one who doesn't come to the Seder. The entire Jewish nation was always before his eyes. The shluchim, who were all over the globe doing amazing work, he said, the Rebbe is the only leader I'm aware of who sent away his most talented students to far-off cities to reach out to Jews in those communities. In other words, you know, other leaders will try to keep their students, their talmidim, you know, in-house, keep them local, but instead he took the most talented and sent them to spread the mission of Torah, of Yiddishkeit. Maybe one final story, which Rabbi Leibel Groner, who was the secretary, told us to Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson. So there was a woman, you know, from the Chabad community in Brooklyn. She was pulled over by a New York City traffic cop for some violation. And he's standing outside her open car window and she's looking for his license and her registration. And the police officer, you know, sees her open purse. She has a picture of the Rebbe there. So he says, excuse me, ma'am, are you one of the followers of this rabbi? She says, yes, I am. Well, in that case, I'm not giving you a ticket. He closed the ticket book and continued, do you know why? Because this rabbi, and he points to the picture that she's now holding in hand, did a very big miracle for me. Well, said the grave woman, since you're not giving me a ticket, now I have time to hear the story. So the policeman smiles and says, it's my favorite story, but I haven't told it to many Jewish people. In fact, I think you're the first. So the cars were whizzing by behind him, and he had to raise his voice a little bit. So the story goes like this. I used to be in the police escort where once a week they escorted the rabbi to the Montefiore Cemetery, right? That's where the previous, the Friedrich Rebbe was buried. I got to know some of the young men who accompanied the Rebbe, and I learned a lot of things. They're very friendly people, which I'm sure you probably already know, and we talked a lot while the rabbi was inside praying. Well, one day, I saw that all the fellows, they were really talking excitedly to each other, so I asked them what happened. They told me the rabbi does a lot of miracles for people, but today he did a miracle that was really something. I didn't even ask what was the miracle they're talking about. I just asked them if the rabbi helps non-Jews also. Sure, they said, the Rebbe helps anybody who asks. Why? Do you need something? So I told him, this young fellow, that me and my wife had been married 9 years with no children. And a week ago, the doctors told us we had no chance. We spent a lot of money on treatments, seen all sorts of big professors running around like crazy the last 6-7 years, and now they told us they tried everything, there's no chance. You can't imagine how broken we were. My wife cried, I started crying myself. So the young man tells me, listen, the next time you escort the Rebbe to the cemetery, stand near the door of his car, and when he gets out, ask him for a blessing. So that's what I did. The next time I was in the escort, I stood by the door. When he got out, I said, excuse me, Rabbi, do you only bless Jewish people or non-Jews too? So the rabbi looked at me like a good friend. It was really amazing, and said he tries to help anyone he can. So I told him what the doctor said, And he said, I should write down on a piece of paper my name and my father's name, together with my wife's and her father's names, and he would pray for us. So I did it. My hands are shaking so much, I almost couldn't write, but I did it. And you know what? My wife became pregnant, and 9 months later, she gave birth to a baby boy. The doctors went crazy. They couldn't figure it out. And when I told them it was all the rabbi's blessing, they just scratched their heads. Wow, I felt like the champion of the world. But here comes the good part. You know what we called him? What name we gave our baby boy? Guess. We called him Mendel, after the rabbi. At first, my wife didn't like the name because it's not an American name, but I said, no, we're calling him Mendel. Each time we say his name, we'll remember that if it wasn't for the rabbi, this boy wouldn't be here. But when our parents heard the name, they really objected. They said, with a name like that, all the kids will think he's a Jew or something, they're going to call him names, they're going to be cruel to him. Why make the kids suffer for no reason? That's just what I want, I said to them. When he comes home and says the other kids called him names and beat him up because he has a Jewish name, I'll tell him that I want him to learn from those other kids how not to behave. They hate the Jews for no reason. But you should love the Jews. You should help the Jews. You should tell them that without that Jewish rabbi called Mendel, then you wouldn't be here at all. And then maybe they'll start thinking differently too. Wow. What an amazing story. I guess it personally resonates because I have a son who's also named Mendel. But wow. These are some, just three stories, but there's so much more. And in Meretz Hashem, we'll have a chance to fabreng and to tell more stories. But I think we'll cover the upcoming Yortzeit of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Zechusa Yogin Aleinu. This should be an inspiration for us to reach out and to help and to care about every single Jew. Okay, have a great day, everybody.